Hello? Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for a Sunday in August. Things have been picking up in Georgia politics a bit, but you can still tell we're in the summer season. Welcome, Bernita and Tim.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, well, a little bit of action here and there. We had two congressional candidates announce their candidacies during the week, been able to talk to both campaigns, if you will, and learn a little bit of stuff. Bobby Saxon in the 10th, an Iraq veteran, seems like a very sharp guy, has helped get the Jackson County Democratic Party back on its feet. And Bobby's announced that he's going to seek Paul Brown's newly won seat in the November elections. Y'all's thoughts?
I read the article in CQ Politics, and it was interesting. But what I couldn't figure out is he still in the National Guard or is he out of the National Guard? Wasn't sure about that one.
Yes, I don't know. I will say this, just from what I understand, once you are in the armed services at this point, it seems like you never leave. I don't know if y'all heard about the guy that served with John Kerry about 2 or 3 years ago. He had not been in since like the 70s or something, but they were ready to pull him back in because they were needing troops. So I don't know how far away you can go.
Well, I don't think you can run if you're still on active duty.
Not on active duty, but I think you could run if you were on, like, your hiatus, if you will. There's no plans to send you back. There was a guy that was in Afghanistan that's running for U.S. Senate in Texas that's getting a lot of attention out there.
Oh, no, Noriega? No, he's not still active.
Yes.
He's not an active guy.
There's
like a rule, a 291-day rule,
yes,
that if you've been active, if you're not going to be active within 291 days, then you can run.
Yes.
Oh, Noriega's doing well. I mean, that guy is totally blowing up the blogosphere in Texas.
Yeah, getting a lot of attention. Well, I guess that's a question we can ask Bobby when he comes on the show later in the fall, because he did say that he was very much interested in being on the show.
Oh, good.
One thing, I'm just glad Bobby's ready to run, and I'm excited. And I mean, I think his profile has some interesting things about it that our three candidates last time didn't have, certainly the military angle. But you do have to think, it's like, gosh, this was such a tough district. I know Mark Matheny talked about how well we did, and, of course, we really don't think we did that well. Is that still
the
opinion?
No, we don't like that.
Yes. So I just, I know that was our consensus a few weeks ago that we were kind of underwhelmed, but I just hope Bobby can improve and then, run a more competitive campaign. And, of course, some of the Republicans may be upset with, legal marijuana man Paul Brown.
Well, at least he has one advantage. He'll have the Athens college crowd to vote.
Yeah, the ones that aren't high as a kite on election day. But in the first district, Bill Gillespie, once again, he has a military background. He's announced his exploratory committee down there in the Savannah area against Jack Kingston. That's, I believe, is that not our longest-serving Republican congressman at this point?
It is. It is, and he will be tough to beat, David. I mean, very tough to beat. But it looks like we got a good candidate to run against him.
I mean, I'm with you, Tim. I think we have a great candidate. I mean, he's taught in every school in that region, Savannah State, Armstrong. He's been affiliated with SCAD, Georgia Southern. So I think he has more of a connection to the community than we've had in a candidate. And he has so many, veterans down there.
Yes,
And it brings up another point too. I hope that the level of candidate that we field in these congressional races next year goes up. That will increase our vote. We may not win a lot of these races, But we really need to start giving the voters a reason to vote for us. And the first way to do that is to give them some good candidates.
Yes, and I think we're on the right move there. One thing that is, that did happen in the first and in, I believe, the third is Westmoreland's new number for that district. When they had to carve away Democratic voters for from districts like ours in the 11th, Tim and I's, and John Barrow and Jim Marshall's seats, they had to put those Democrats somewhere, and the first is one of those districts where they had to place them. So the Democratic vote actually increased after redistricting. So it is better than if you looked at, say, a 1998 race or a 2002 race.
I think it'll be he'll be a great race because he can appeal to the large number of swing voters. There's actually more Democratic voting primary voters in that district than there are Republicans.
Yes, and so we're kind of filling it in. I believe Joe Inman, I think we mentioned him some weeks back, running in the Nathan Deal seat. Can't say too much, but I do know that there's a strong candidate looking at the 11th. And so, you know, you're kind of filling in, so it looks like we may have a candidate.
What do you mean you can't say too much?
Well,
a little teaser you're dropping on you?
Didn't
say that much.
Yes, well, yeah.
Isn't that your congressional district?
It is. And when this person's ready, you can better believe that they'll get plenty of kudzu vine time. But we're here for all the candidates. If a candidate in any of the districts in Georgia wants to come on, Democratic candidates, we're all for it.
I'm going to throw some teasers out there. Tim, you got any teasers you want to throw out?
Well, actually, I know about the person that he's talking about, and I understand why he's not giving out their name at this time. But he is right. That person, I think, will make a good candidate. Certainly
okay.
A better candidate than we've been running up here.
Yeah. Well, I guess some of the other news, following up on, unfortunately, a new piece to the story of an old story covered 2 weeks ago. We had the people that didn't file their disclosures properly and got fined, and we talked about how something needs to be done, whether it's the legislative caucus, the party, someone needs to step in and get some, something in place so we don't get these embarrassments. One of those people, Representative Ron Saylor Jr., he had another charge. He apparently did not pay or paid his power or utility bills with a bad check, and it was over $1,000, which that means, I mean, I would have to think that his bill was delinquent to owe that much. Either that or he's got one of the largest carbon stamps of anybody in Georgia, if that's his monthly bill.
Well, unfortunately, David, that check was in the amount of over $500, which makes it a felony. On top of that, when he was arrested, he was apparently driving with a suspended license, and there was another charge of a failure to appear in court. And to add insult to injury, this is great here. On his arrest report, the address he gave was not in the district that he represents, and as we know, that's against the law in Georgia. So I think he's in some real trouble.
Well, Bernita, that would be, he would represent your home county. I don't know that he lives in your home county since that's
no.
up for debate. What is the local thought on him?
I think they are considering it an open race. I've talked to a lot of friends that are in the African-American community, religious community, and they just don't understand what happened. You know, they see it from a different angle than we see it politically. They see it as him hurting the African-American religious community because he does own a church and he is a pastor of a church.
Yeah.
And then they just don't understand how he could become delinquent.
And if I'm not mistaken, his father was Ron Saylor, who was on the news, SB News.
Right.
He's probably a pretty popular and seemed like a really, solid guy.
And I think that's how he's been running unopposed for so long.
Because people just assume that he's just a chip off the old block, and for the father's sake, we hope there's some differences.
Hey, I'm just totally shocked that he doesn't even live in his district. That's probably the biggest thing for me is that he doesn't live, and it's a great district he lives in. I mean, it's improving. They've got, not even improving, it's a developing district. Like, they're building new houses out there, like subdivisions out the wazoo over in that part of South DeKalb. And, you know, he's got a very prosperous, informed community. And, you know, there's always been talks that, you know, he has a very high absentee record in the legislation. And he doesn't really, he's not on board with a lot of the Democrats when voting either. So I'm not sure how much love he'll get from other members. You know, normally when you run against an incumbent, most of them stay out the race.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how many are going to, you know, stand and support him on, you know, with his latest incidents.
Or will he even make the race? I mean, to me, there's several outcomes. One, he has resigned, and this becomes an open seat with a special election. Two, he's, you know, somehow either comes to his senses or somebody brings him to his senses. He doesn't qualify. And, of course, there's the third option. People run against him in a primary. Who are we looking at to run? Any names have dropped?
I've heard of two. One's a female and one's a male, and they both have run for Senate positions in that district.
Okay. Yes. Any former people that have served?
No. You mean former people who have served
like
in that
former
district?
Former female state senators that...
No. Mm-mm. Oh, no. Don't go there.
Okay. I know one female state senator that, you know, sought a different office, and I'm not exactly sure what...
I don't think she lives in that district.
Okay.
Let's hope not.
You actually, and it's probably pretty key this time to actually live in the district.
I think they really might want that one this time.
Yeah, that's kind of a rule that people like, although our congressman, I think he's lived in his district about a year and I don't know how long and not lived in it much longer. So, but that's a different rule in Congress.
Yes, it is.
Yes, so that was just a big story. What else did y'all see that caught y'all's eye in the blogosphere? Or in other news?
Well, there was the Democratic debate this morning, you know, on ABC out in Iowa. Did either one of y'all get to see it?
Nope.
I'd have been at church. So, and you know what? I did read about it, and it wasn't about like, oh, what did you think about that debate? It was more like, why are they having a debate on Sunday morning? So I think that if the ratings are pretty poor for that, there may be a real questioning of doing that again.
Yeah, well, this is actually the second one they've done. You know, the Republicans debated. It's Stephanopoulos doing it on his show, and the Republicans debated on there a couple of weeks ago from Iowa as well.
Yes, and I know that they've done that in the Senate races. And one thing I have noticed, like C-SPAN will re-show debates, so it may be that that becomes later footage for C-SPAN to re-show, because they re-showed a CNN debate a while back.
Well, I can tell you, David, that this was probably Obama's best performance. One of the guys that wrote a story said at the debate, Obama finally raised his head above sea level, was the way he put it. And it was clearly his best performance. He did what he came there today to do, I think, which is to answer all those questions about all those gaps he's made recently. And he did it very well. I thought he won this debate. But there was, you know, no big things that happened. Nothing was upset. The apple cart was not upset in any way, so...
Yes, and obviously if the viewership and the buzz around it is pretty low, it won't change the movement of the race. I did see a piece of footage from, I'd recorded Chris Matthews' show, watched it this afternoon. I did see a piece of footage where he went into a New Hampshire hardware store and didn't know what a trailer hitch was, which, I mean, I've known what a trailer hitch was always. I mean, not only did I see them around on trucks, you know, your little matchbox cars had them, but he didn't know what he wanted a trailer hitch was, which they were asking if that would hurt him or not. I really don't know. I think people see that this is a guy that grew up in Hawaii, grew up in, like, the Philippines or Indonesia or some, you know, one of the Pacific Rim countries or territories, and then lived in inner city Chicago, and I'm sure a lot of folks don't have trucks with trailer hitches in Chicago. So I don't think it'll hurt.
No, I don't think so.
Yes.
Also, it was interesting that he has he put out the statement that he wasn't going to do any more reforms unless they were sanctioned.
I thought
it was really good. It was about time somebody stopped the madness.
Yes, and I guess the forms then may become the second-tier candidate's way of doing it. I mean, it's kind of like you hear about sporting organizations that as they start to build up, they schedule matches, and one group will have 20 matches and one group will have four. And then, of course, they have official leagues then that say, hey, everybody will have 16 games. Everybody will have 82 games. It's getting to the point where these debates that they need a official, you know, political league to sanction all of these. And so
I think it just takes a lot out of the campaign schedule.
Yes.
You can't really get around because you have to fly, you know, 3,000 miles for a debate and then turn around. That's what I'm hoping that when, you know, Georgia gets up and running and more aware about the Senate candidates, that we won't have, you know, debates, you know, two in one day, you know, that are 5 hours apart from each other. Because that was rough in 2006 when it wasn't organized.
Yes. Well, one thing that does need to be done, if you're talking about the Senate debates, anything to get them news at this point would be good. I mean, even if it is in a county that has, you know, 20,000 people living in it, they could use the press from that paper. Because, I mean, you just really hear very little or next to nothing coming out of these Senate campaigns. I know it's the early part where you build your, you know, you build your fundraising coffers up, you, you know, get your team and your strategy in place, but you're hearing absolutely nothing out of any of the three. You'd think they would at least kind of trade weeks in which one week, you know, hear something out of Cardwell, and the next week it'd be something out of Jones, and the next week you'd hear something out of Knight. I guess Knight can take this week since he's on our show in a little while. But, I mean, you'd think you would hear at least a little more with three candidates running a campaign.
Do you think right now that's attributable to the candidates and their campaign?
Well, I mean,
Or rather the larger sleepiness of Georgia politics right now?
Well, it is you do have to say, hey, do I want to create news in such a vacuum when it might not get covered? I will say this. I mean, you know, the papers, they're getting to where they cover less and less local politics and cover more national politics. Everything's presidential. But then, you know, with your blogosphere and your ways that you can create your own media without going through the, you know, the traditional media filter, you think there'd be something going on, you know, in that vein. And speaking of, like, raising money, you'd think at least someone would be having fundraisers. And maybe they're having them and we're just not hearing about them, but between the three of us, if we're missing them, then I'm thinking a lot of folks are missing them.
And I've talked to some of the people that would, you know, be intricately involved in some of this fundraising, David, and a lot of them haven't even been contacted by these candidates. And when I'm saying these people, I'm talking what, the traditional low-hanging fruit is the political term.
Yeah.
Why not? Why aren't these people being contacted? These should be the...
Maybe they're still going through their love list.
I don't know. I mean, you know, unless you're day-to-day with them or talking to somebody that's day-to-day with them, it's hard to answer that question. Well,
or maybe our low-hanging fruits aren't really feeling like being plucked right now. Could that be a reason, too?
That's true. I mean, they could be getting called and then say some getting called and some saying, no, thank you.
I'm waiting for another candidate.
Yeah, Tim's saying they're not even getting called, so that's a different story.
Not those that I've talked to. They haven't even been contacted yet.
Yes. Well,
so how is it on a county level, Tim? I mean, being a county chair. Are they contacting, you know, coming to meetings? And
yeah,
like that?
They we've had some contacts from them in that vein, you know, for sit downs. But you know, I'm not the person they need to talk to fill up their campaign coffers.
Yeah.
I'm the person they talk to put up signs for them and organize the county for them.
Yeah.
And I just wonder why they're not talking to these money people. That's what they need.
Well, Tim and Bernita, I believe Rand Knight has just called in to join us. Mr. Knight.
Yes, sir. How are you today?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Yes, sir, indeed.
Yes. Well, we went ahead and introduced you early in the show, a U.S. Senate candidate running for the Georgia Senate nomination this upcoming year for 2008. And, of course, our audience is a pretty informed audience, so they probably know a little bit about you, but go ahead and kind of give us just a brief background of your life?
Sure. Well, most recently before moving back to Georgia, where I was born and raised here in Georgia for first 20-plus years, just before moving back here, I spent just about 3 years up in D.C., working on a big environmental research project, almost $1 billion in value, that we had to push through the Bush administration. You can imagine that's a pretty difficult prospect, and learned how to do that effectively, and that's what I was doing just before I got back to Atlanta. My background before that, doctorate in ecology and master's in forestry and ecosystems, bachelor's in environmental studies, and a whole lot of technology experience, both with Fortune 100 big companies as well as hardware consulting and integration, everybody from NASA to the National Science Foundation, and a lot of business experience, really prioritizing investments, doing due diligence, both due diligence for new private investments, but also for government-related investments, and a lot of persuasion and understanding of how to get successful legislation, successful deals through both companies and the government. So environment, technology, D.C. experience, and business.
Yes. And now what compelled you to seek the U.S. Senate seat?
Well, I just several things. I mean, I believe I've spent the last 20 years equipping myself to handle the kinds of problems we have facing us on the horizon the next 20 to 30 years. I was looking for a lot of different leaders to stand up. Didn't see that happening in Georgia. I had expected more of it. Was inspired by speaking to several leaders in the Democratic Party about what they saw as an electable candidate and what kind of person we could really get behind in Georgia and actually get elected against Saxby. And so after doing some background research and taking a look at you know, what my top priorities were and what Georgia's interests were, specifically with respect to getting out of Iraq, the legal immigration, health care, what have you, the fit was right and the time is right, so we think we can beat Saxby.
Yes. Now, what would you say is the key issue that you're going to run on or contrast against Saxby Chambliss?
Sure. Well, as is probably obvious from my academic background, I have a lot of green experience, a lot of environmental ecology experience. So underlying all of my primary priorities is this idea of being able to lead under the uncertainty facing us with respect to the environmental problems facing us, whether it be clean air, clean water, healthy food, global warming. All these things are going to impact, you know, our health care, for example. They're going to have even impact illegal immigration. They have an impact on job creation. They have an impact on working families in Georgia. So, you know, each of those last several ones, and of course my number one issue is ending the war in Iraq and getting out of Iraq. So that certainly contrasts against Saxby's primary stance, and he couldn't even get his own immigration bill passed through Congress, so that's something that I can certainly stand up and support with Democratic values. And, you know, the health care issues, we've seen him vote against the SCIP program recently, voting against the health of our children in Georgia, even when we saw how much money it was going to save the state and the country in the long run. And we know when we don't have kids in the hospital, they're happier and families are happier. So as far as I'm concerned, he voted against quality of life for our citizens. And that's something, it's just the opposite of what I believe in. So I'll give you a few of them there.
Yes, yes. Well, we're also on here with Tim Shiflett, who's the Chattooga County Democratic Chair, and Bernita Smith, who's a DeKalb County State Committee member, and I want to give them a chance also to ask questions. Tim, you got anything for Mr. Knight?
Yes, sir, I do. Dr. Knight, at this time there are three known Democratic candidates in this race. If you would, please share with our listeners why you think you would make the best choice to take on Saxby Chambliss next year.
Yeah, I'd love to answer that. I really believe that today's leaders have got to be educated about human dimensions of environmental problems as well as the biological and technical dimensions of it, and that's what I've spent my life doing. That's something that the other candidates have no experience in. And integrating those issues is going to be crucial to the kinds of vision and the ability to see ahead, to communicate what you see. That's something that I've spent a lot of time working on, finding information, synthesizing it, transmitting this information effectively. It's another area that I focus on, my decision-making capacity and my understanding of the implications, as I mentioned earlier, for major issues like global warming and how that affects our ability to have a good agriculture industry in this state. My understanding of how that affects our health care, and that's also related to things like fair trade and working families and imports from China, for example, and the ability to synthesize huge amounts of data and to actually problem solve with these issues with both a technical background, a financial, economic background, and the years in Georgia, my time here, just knowing the people here, I find myself in a much better position to convince Georgia voters that Democrats are better at governing our country. I mean, I believe I'm the only mainstream progressive Democrat in the race. So the question is, who can drive the most hope for change? Who can get an excitement, you know, desire, this promise for a new day that we all want? Who's going to be the best at doing that? Who can explain that we have this new spirit, but we have old principles? You know, who's going to fill the shoes of the Democrats we love so much from the 20th century? So I really feel like I'll be able to awaken the soul of Democrats in Georgia, help us stand up again, and show Georgia the Democrats we are the mainstream.
Okay, thank you for that. I have one more question for you, and then I'll throw it over to Bernita. You touched on this very briefly, but I want to come back to it. No doubt the immigration issue in next year's Senate race will be a huge issue here in Georgia. If you would just share with us the immigration plan that you wish to present to the voters.
Sure, and I do hope to have a PDF file soon up on the website in the coming months. Will really delineate some details, but let me just say, we need to use technology initially and some more manpower to secure the borders. I worked testing out several sensor systems developed by NASA that allowed us to track individual birds coming off the East Coast 400 miles away, and these things weighed a half pound. So I can tell you for certain that we've got some technology that will assist us in solving this problem along 714 miles, what have you, border. So secure the border. We've got to stop the flow, get that under control. We've got to give this technology that we have available to employers to be able to validate, verify, audit who's actually asking for a job, who's working for them, where the taxes are being paid, what their history is. Because that, you know, is one of the first steps we've got to do in holding the employers accountable. There are dozens of laws on the books right now that, if they were simply enforced, would allow us to hold employers more accountable and would stem the flow and the tide of a lot of these problems that we're already seeing. You know, obviously the pressure on our hospitals we see with Grady, on our public schools we see all over the state, the pressures are in every sector. So we've got to give the folks who are providing the revenue streams to illegal immigrants, we've got to both enforce the laws against them and give them the technology necessary to stop that. We also just got to give some ground rules for folks who are here who want to stay to become legal, but we've got to demand it. You know, you can't break the law and continue breaking it forever. You got to own up. So that's very brief, I know, and very high level, but they give you an idea where I'm thinking.
Thank you, Dr. Knight. Bernita?
You sent a letter out to the state committee members, and in that letter you cited Sam Nunn four times. Why do you model your campaign or your style of campaigning after Sam Nunn?
Well, maybe I shouldn't do that so much. I have a lot of respect for the guy, though, I must admit. I didn't actually count that. That was in it that many times, but I will go back and check that. I have a lot of respect for what he did for Georgia. He was a great leader as far as I was concerned for Georgia. He built seniority in the Senate and brought a lot of revenue to Georgia that we didn't have before. Was I happy with every single policy he had? No. particularly not happy with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, for example. But not very few people are perfect, so his legislative history may not have been perfect, but I still believe he was a testament to a great senator, and certainly for Georgia.
Well, does that not contrast with the fact that people, including the Rome newspaper, are now endorsing him from president as an independent candidate?
It does. It does. And I can't speak for, his evolution philosophically, as a politician. I find some of that very interesting myself. Certainly believe that he led in the United States Senate with very true democratic values. Certainly how we define those values, how we communicate them, has evolved from 1972 to now. A lot of the media we use to communicate these values and the grassroots level weren't even around then. So, that's a great question. And does it contrast? Sure, to a degree. Does that mean I think that what he did in the past is any less worthy? No, it doesn't.
No, I was referring to, would that mean that you would also switch to being an independent if you followed?
I'm sorry. I must have misunderstood the question. No. I mean, I'm a mainstream progressive Democrat. I think that folks who really take a deep look, and I'll be glad to answer more detail if I can here, at my issues, we'll see where my heart and soul is with respect to the Democratic Party.
Well, last question.
Sure.
You touched on a bit, and as a board member of Atlanta Stonewall Democrats, I have to ask, why do you disagree with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
Well, I think it encourages discrimination. You basically can get fired for, let's put it bluntly, for who you fall in love with. That's not a democratic value. In my opinion, there should be no discrimination whatsoever in this country at any level. And this is legalized discrimination that's going on with respect to being able to be fired for being gay and a lot of this country. So does that answer the question?
Yes. I'll throw it back to David.
Yes. Well, Mr. Knight, I did take the time to look up, and I actually double-checked it to make sure it wasn't a computer glitch or at least a short-term computer glitch. I downloaded your FEC filing from July,
uh-huh.
And I noticed that the disbursements, you had $21,681 in disbursements, but there was no itemized record of the disbursements. What happened there? Do you know?
We sent an updated one. It was just an error on the reporting side on our behalf in terms of understanding what was reported and when, and that the updated, amended one, I guess is the proper word, should be up there. If it's not, I'll call and check on that this week.
I did try to download the fullest one. I mean, that's usually when the amendments happen. You can download and get the one with more pages. Will be more the one you need to look at, if you will.
Sure, and we'll make sure that everyone has the purview of that. Certainly have nothing to hide there, and we did submit an amended one, and we'll make sure it gets up there.
Yes, I mean, because it just as a good Democrat, I just see, I want to make sure that all of our candidates run the best campaigns, because this is the kind of thing the Republicans will harp on. I mean, what be it a candidate not putting their disclaimer, the proper disclaimer on their television ad, which we've seen, or, the proper filing type stuff. And, like I said, it may be a computer issue that it's just not up like it should be. And if you end up seeing it and want to send it to me, I think Bernita and I, either one, could maybe link it to the blogs, because that way people would know, hey, this guy's open access.
No problem. We'd be more than happy. I will take care of that this week.
Yes. Well, tell us a little bit of things about what's going on in your campaign, how you're making it around the state, what you're finding out.
Yeah, well, we're, in just really hardcore fundraising mode right now. Trying to hit some big numbers for the end of this quarter. Obviously, we want to validate, build credibility with the media and with folks who are looking, folks who are going to be endorsing us and coming on board with the campaign, or hoping to see the kind of numbers that validate a U.S. senatorial campaign statewide. So I've been in front of, everyone from Democratic state senators to, committee men and women to environmental leaders, church leaders, different labor leaders, trying to really get out there and understand what kind of events are going on that we want to be exposed to in the next several months. Because between the private fundraising that we do internally and the more public events, we just want to make sure that we're covering Georgia well over the next 40 days.
Yes. Well,
do you think?
Go ahead, Bernita.
What impact would you believe your campaign would have if a fourth or fifth candidate appeared on the scene?
Well, I think that probably depends on when they would declare, I suspect. We are probably, we feel pretty good about, you know, a range of numbers we'd like to get to this quarter, and I don't know that that introduction of somebody else would affect that number that much this quarter. You know, certainly who that person is will affect everyone's fundraising going forward, I'm sure, including that person themselves. So I, it's a hard thing to comment on, but obviously there would be some kind of impact.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to predict. It would have to be who comes in and other factors. A lot of times, politics runs on endorsements. But this race so far, I haven't seen a lot of endorsements of any of the three candidates, so there's some endorsements of your campaign that we may have missed.
There are, and, you know, certainly getting the right kind of people to publicize this information and to deal with communications at a level that we have not been doing the last 60 days, largely unconsciously and on purpose, although we can turn that around 100% in the next 60 days in terms of getting the public the information about what we are doing here. I would say, I'm sorry, can you repeat the original question again?
Basically, have there been any endorsements of your campaign that we hadn't heard about?
Yeah.
I mean, there really
yeah.
haven't been a lot that I've heard about of any of the three candidates.
So we have a few, I would like to be specific now, been told not to, but there will be several you will see in the next 6 weeks. There are leaders, in each of the main sectors of the Democratic Foundation that have stepped forward and signed endorsement forms for us. And I will find out how soon we can get those on the website. I was down in Macon last night, been in Glynn County this week. We've been getting out several hundred yard signs to different folks who've been endorsing us, so that might give an idea to folks who start seeing those up around Macon and Glynn where that's coming from. But we'll certainly rely on our PR folks to figure that out.
Certainly.
You're putting yard signs out already?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, so how was the Glynn County breakfast?
The Ryan Steak? I wasn't at Ryan Steak. I had been double booked, and I have been required to be in several places at once and been learning what that's about, so working with some folks who are helping getting our scheduling down pat. So, no, we weren't at the Ryan's breakfast, but I have several family members who are here from Glynn and who have been with me in Macon yesterday and throughout the state in the last couple of days.
Yes. Now, you've told us a lot about it in your letter, and you and I have talked it in Macon at the state committee event about your team that you have nationally. Now, who's in place or what positions are in place on your in-state team that works day-to-day?
Sure. Just hired a finance director. Her name's Alex Spivak. We've just started working with a very knowledgeable and experienced person named Claudia Graham, who works here in the state, who worked on several statewide campaigns in the last several years. And between Alex Spivak as finance and Claudia as kind of an in-state organizer for right now, we're going to be kind of hand-picking the team going forward the next 6 weeks all across the state. So,
yes, and going back to your national team, I know that you hired a Cinder Lakes polling firm for your polling. Have you had a chance? Have y'all decided to put a poll out in the field yet?
We haven't. I've been working with Lake Research and David Merman and Cinder Lakes to really get an understanding of where our focus needs to be in terms of our primary fundraisers and our primary bundlers here in Georgia, and helping them come up to speed with our campaign and what we're who we are and what we're trying to get people excited about. So we're kind of getting to know each other now and plan to have some formal ones in late September and October.
Certainly. Well, I thank you for being on the show. Before you go, is there anything that you want us to know about that we didn't cover?
Well, no, I appreciate being on the show very much. I look forward, as the time goes on, to have an opportunity to come on and talk some more. I certainly want people to think about the central new leadership skills that we need to face the problems we have coming in the next 20 years, and really understand that we have a need for leaders who understand the processes of science, of society, of economics, and are able to synthesize that and sell to society and to senators and congressmen why we've got to take the steps we've got to take to make sure we have an increase in quality of life for our grandkids. So.
Okay. Well, thank you again for coming on the Kudzu Vine.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, another U.S. Senate interview from second of our three candidates, and I'm sure Del Cardwell is going to come on soon. I know at least I've been in contact with his campaign. Tim, I believe you also invited him, so we'll probably have the third of the set, if you will, soon.
That would be great.
Yes. I guess there was another thing besides that I want to talk about I saw this week. I noticed that I believe it was on Blog for Democracy. I'm looking for it now so I can talk about the three specific events. There was three training events, all in Fulton County, coming up very soon, one from Emily's List, one from the Obama campaign, and then one from Democracy for America. Sounds like a lot of great training opportunities. Bernita, what have you heard about these?
I think all three, like you said, are supposed to be good. I know a lot of the progressive organizations are working with for the September 8th, 9th, Democracy for America training, and that should be really good. Like the Young Democrats, Georgia for Democracy, Atlanta Stonewall. I won't be attending Camp Obama, but I'm looking forward to hearing reports about Camp Obama. Maybe we can have someone come on Sunday and talk about Camp Obama.
Yes, that might be a good idea to have. I see a LaWanna Hurd be our contact person. I don't know if you know her, but we need to get definitely in contact with her and then go from there and maybe hear about each of the trainings. I mean, it's the kind of thing, gosh, if I just didn't have that job to go to, I could just get really trained and really informed. I know some of them are seriously on the weekends, but sometimes that's your chance to recover, if you will. But that's just, great that these, three different Democratic organizations are not ignoring Georgia and coming in and doing the training. And hopefully there may be some little techniques that the state party can pick up on that they can put into their training for the Leadership Academy they're putting together. And I don't know how you feel about this, Bernita, but one thing I do see, and I've been to some of these trainings and conferences both in D.C., here in Georgia, and they're always great. You get such great information. But one thing I'd like to see is that, especially if we do a longer-term one that's more intense, is to take it to the next level and not just have people tell and hear, but have people actually do. Like, okay, here's the basics of fundraising. Now I want you to come up with just in the next overnight or whatever it may be, or over this week if it's a meet every week kind of training, I want you to put together a fundraising plan, maybe two pages of one. I mean, certainly a fundraising plan might be a 10-page plan for this campaign, but let's just put together a two-page document and see kind of put people in action and see what kind of product they can produce.
Well, I think it also would be good if we could connect them with campaigns. I mean, I think this would be the state party's chance or opportunity to have a list of candidates who need campaign help. I mean, it may seem early, but, I mean, they should have a list of possible candidates by now.
Oh, yes. I'm sure they're recruiting. We've talked about having Rashad Taylor come on soon and possibly tell us some of the targeted districts. And we obviously know some of them. I mean, there's Mike Jacobs. He switched. We've got to go after him. The seat George Wilson got in the high 40s on that Robert Munford, I believe, is the current rep for. That one's changing so quickly that seems like a seat that we should get this time, in this election. So there are going to be some targets here and there. Any race that the Democrat got more than 45% would have to be on the target list, and you'd have to be recruiting candidates and know if people are interested.
Well, I think we also, in that vein, need to realize we have to go down ticket. I mean, there's a lot of district attorney races that we as Democrats need to protect. And sheriffs, I mean, they've got some good sheriff races that may be coming up, especially like in Rockville.
Yes,
and
Tracy
in Camden County.
Yes, I know that there's a, I guess, a Republican running against the current Republican, but hopefully we'll get a Democrat in there, too. I know that there's been a Democratic candidate to make a move in Henry County. So, you know, we may see some more. And sheriffs are very important in the political landscape. Tim, you still there with us?
I'm right here.
Wanted to make sure you got quiet all of a sudden.
I was enjoying listening to that.
Certainly. And another thing that I did catch a rumor of is that two of our sitting Democratic congressmen, John Barrow and Sanford Bishop, may get Democratic challengers from the left. Do you think there's anything to this rumor? What are y'all's thoughts on that?
I'm not sure it should be Sanford. I think Sanford's been, he's what, 92% voting with us?
I believe
yeah.
It says he votes with the Democratic majority 96.3% of the time.
So how could he draw opposition from the left?
I don't
mean,
think it would be credible. And then John Barrow.
I mean, he voted against FISA compared to Barrow and Marshall, who decided not to vote for it.
Well,
I mean, they voted for FISA, so.
Yes, and John Barrow, in a very tough district, votes with the Democratic majority 80.2% of the time. I mean, that's still, I mean, if you're in a tough district, that, to me, I can live with that. I don't know vote by vote what it is that he did and didn't vote for, but you got to think, I mean, you know, if he gets beat by Max Burns or someone else, they're going to vote with the Democrats less than 20% of the time. So, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sure some of those, you know, some of those characters like Phil Gingrey, if they vote with the Democrats more than 5% of the time, it'd be an absolute shock to me. So, you know, I don't think there's any place for either one of those things to happen.
Not in Barrow's district especially. I mean, we saw the election result, you know, last year. He gets bloodied up in a primary. He's in real trouble.
Yes, and so that's something that I hope doesn't come to be, but you just always see these rumors, and this is the kind of place where you can endorse it. I mean, not endorse it, speak on it and discuss it. Speaking of
it also depends on what part of the blogosphere you found that rumor at, David.
Well, I mean, you know, you got to look at all different sites and pick up what you can. And then also another one that's gotten a lot of attention today was the Romney Tribune, the paper that, you know, is written in my town. I read it online and don't really subscribe to it. But they endorsed Sam Nunn for president, which really you got to understand, for the Romney Tribune, that's progress for them to jump off the GOP bandwagon and you know, support an independence candidacy of a former Democratic senator. That's progress for this paper. Am I not right, Tim?
Absolutely. There's been days when we were calling it the wrong news, and some days we still do. And you know, the paper is the family that owns it is Republican, and it's exhibited over the years in their editorial pages. For them to endorse a high-profile person like him is something interesting.
Yes, and really, I mean, I don't think Sam Nunn asked for this. I think people just mention his name because of, you know, Michael Bloomberg looking at running and these people doing the Unity 08 ticket. I think at the end of the day there won't be anything much to him being the third-party candidate. We may be at this point where we always have a third-party candidate of some, you know, consequence, be it, you know, what was his face, Nader or, you know, Perot or whoever it may be. So it's just the fact of life that some people are just such staunch independents that they don't really want to claim allegiance to either party and are ready to support a third way at, you know, at any turn. Yes, well, what are some other things that y'all see happening in the political world in Georgia?
Well, the big thing with Grady Hospital in Atlanta has been talked about a great deal, the pulling back and forth. The bottom line is, though, that area's population is absolutely exploding. We do know that Grady gives indigent care. On the other hand, they're one of the best trauma centers for local hospitals probably in the country. I know they're a level one. I hope this political tug of war doesn't hurt that hospital too badly, because it's needed.
Yes.
Well, and once his property taxes go to it, I hope they figure out what the problem is.
Yes, I do think one thing that they, you know, did get a benefit from was, you know, Glenn Richardson, who people wouldn't assume would support a, you know, institution like Grady, went to Georgia State and apparently had to go to the hospital there one time and therefore sees the need, and that may help them with some statewide funding. And it did get more of a political angle recently. Usually when you hear it discussed, there's just not a real political angle, but then state senators have been and state reps have been stepping up with plans, and it seems kind of interesting to me. It seems like since the legislature got out of session, I've heard more proposals and plans for changing taxes and changing car tags and building roads and reforming Grady and changing the dogfighting laws than when they were in session.
Yes, because now they can't do anything, so it's all about the propaganda.
So now they got all these plans now. It's like, where were y'all with whatever?
Yeah, yeah, really.
I mean,
every one of those plans will disappear.
And a lot of it you can keep. I mean, you can keep the tax plan that's going to put, you know, taxes on our medical bills and everything else. But then you still kind of wonder, it's like, you know, what were you guys doing? But then I guess, as they start to see Sonny Perdue as more of a lame duck, you're probably going to see them have more proposals because they've kind of taken their lead from him, and he's, you know, pretty much a do-nothing. So
I think it's going to be interesting February 6th, right after the presidential primary, to see how much posturing goes on for the 2010 election.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess you will have some, but then it may be after the true general in November, it really heats up. I don't know. I mean, I don't know our side. It may be, you know, hopefully one strong candidate. I mean, there's so many different models. And I think I'm ready to try the one strong candidate, kind of like Max Cleland in 96 for U.S. Senate. That's the my preferred route at this point. Even though I do like choices at times, I don't think as a party we're ready for too many choices to rip each other up.
No, not right now.
Yeah.
When we were the dominant party in the state, it was a different thing, but we're not anymore.
Well, we've tried it. We tried it with the last governor's race. We tried it, you know, to an extent with the U.S. Senate race last time. And this U.S. Senate race, I would say the candidates look fairly evenly matched at this point. One may break out. But so we're seeing this model a lot. It doesn't seem to be the best model. Well, Tim, we're coming close to the close of the show, and it's time for the outrage of the week.
All right, David. Our old buddy Karl Rove will exit the political stage at the end of this month. Ironically, the carefully timed event will occur while Congress is out of town. The man who rode in 6.5 years ago as a conquering hero now slinks away, vilified by many, even in his own party. Here was a man who boasted of being the architect of a Republican majority that would last for decades. What he created instead was the most polarized federal government in history and a polarized electorate to boot. What an amateurish error for a person who claims to be a great student of history. Just 2 short years ago, with the election of 2004 in the books, though he believed that his vision of the GOP he had crafted had indeed arrived. Here's what he said in a speech in 2005, and I quote, "Today, conservatism is the guiding philosophy in the White House, the Senate, the House, and in governorships and legislatures throughout America." He then went on to say that liberalism was becoming irrelevant, and the Democrats should just get used to being in the majority. It just had to be. After all, the great Karl Rove had foreseen it. So convinced he could do no wrong, what did he advise President Bush to do? Well, exactly what Bush did do and had been doing. The president and his cohorts in Congress pushed through their agenda with all the grace of a Mack truck. Instead of reaching out to compromise, they legislated with a scorched earth vengeance. And inevitably, they made the mistake that many with perceived absolute power make. They overreached. And behind it all was one Karl Rove. I am constantly amazed at how quickly times change in politics. Yesterday's garbage is today's gold. When Rove leaves Washington, D.C., he will leave behind a Republican Party in tatters, and it's mostly his fault. Compassionate conservatism was just another catchphrase to this guy. He could win elections, but when forced to govern, he was just lost. And what does Rove talk about nowadays here at the end? Does he reminisce or wax poetic about days gone by? No, he blasts Hillary Clinton. A final outrage from an outrageous man. To paraphrase John Kennedy, he leaves like he came in, no class. I personally want this man to just disappear. His presence, well, it always kind of frightened me. There's something universally unsettling about any person who promotes himself as the Emperor in Star Wars while he has the look of Mr. Magoo. Rest in peace, Republican Permanent Majority, and Karl Rove, a personal message for you as well. Get out of town. Dave?
Yes, another outrage of the week. Well, Karl Rove, you know, you're absolutely right. He had a plan to win, but he didn't have a plan to govern. And when you think about it, I don't know one single legislative bill that Bush and his administration has passed through since the reelection. It started off, they tried to do the, you know, the Social Security giveaway, if you will, putting it all into private accounts. And that failed, and they never seemed to have the power or anything else to push anything else through legislatively. Can y'all think of anything they've pushed through?
Well, that one you just mentioned, David, by the way, had Karl Rove's personal stamp on it. That
certainly was
his baby, Social Security reform, and that was typical of his legislative agenda. It just failed miserably, and I can't think of anything of a landmark nature.
Yeah, that was kind of the domestic undoing of the Bush administration. Obviously, the war in Iraq was the foreign policy undoing. So you kind of had, you know, both sides. It was like once they didn't have either to depend on. It. They couldn't say, oh, we're doing so great domestically. Yeah, we maybe messed it up in foreign policy or vice versa. They had nothing at that point because people were rejected. They could see that it wasn't compassionate with these plans tilted towards Wall Street and what have you. Well, Bernita and Tim, I think another great show in the books, and let's just plan on another one for next week. With we don't have our guests lined up, but Bernita, Tim, and I have done plenty of consulting to think of different great show topics, so we'll be back next week with On the Kudzu Vine. Good night.
Okay.
Talk to you then.
Good night. Bye-bye.